Michael New, hello.
How you doing?
Good. You are a guest on Labors for Neighbors, a new show. We talk about work and the glories of work and in some instances, the agonies of work. That's the kind of world we live in. I read about your work. You are an associate scholar.
Yes.
At Lozier Institute. Am I pronouncing Lozier correctly?
It's actually Lozier. It's the Charlotte Lozier Institute, which is the research and education arm of the Susan B. Anthony List.
I had never heard of Charlotte Lozier before.
Yeah, she was a contemporary of Susan B. Anthony. She was a pro-life obstetrician and gynecologist back in the 1800s. And she's not super well known, but she was a pro-life feminist. And we decided to honor her by naming our pro-life think tank after her. So
it would have helped if she had lived longer. She only lived to 26.
That is correct.
The article in Christian Union, which is an organization that is devoted to Christianizing, to blessing, to transforming the leadership of the Ivy League. And so the Ivy League, 90% of our leaders in corporate, scholastic, government is from the Ivy League. So if you can Christianize them and have them behaving like Christ, that is to the good. So, who do you know at Christian Union? How did you come to appear in Christian Union magazine?
They kind of found me. A writer named Catherine Alvey noticed some of my freelance writing, noticed that I had an undergraduate degree from Dartmouth. She noticed I have a doctor from Stanford, and they're based near Princeton University. And I spent a year working at a private think tank, the Witherspoon Institute, which is Professor Robbie George's kind of own private think tank. I spent a year there, and I know some of the cast of characters of Princeton. So I think it was a combination of my freelance writing and some Princeton connections brought me to her attention. And she contacted me a few months ago about writing a story, and I agreed, and it came out recently. It's very flattering, very honored they highlighted my work in that way.
I lost count of all the places that you've worked at or are a professor at. It was just, and so good for you that you have striven to work at a variety of places. What's the furthest west that you have worked?
I guess I was a graduate student at Stanford, and I was a teaching assistant there. So
when did you, are you a pro-life activist strategist? What do you consider yourself besides a son of God? A brother of Christ. What do you consider yourself, secularly speaking?
I'm many things. I'm a pro-life analyst. I'm a strategist. I'm also an activist. You know, I think that writing and research is certainly important. And I have a skill set that does allow me to look at various social science data and sometimes get published in various peer-reviewed academic journals. But I also think that pro-life is more than about me sitting in my office drinking a big cup. It is. But I also see myself as an activist. I do coordinate the Washington, D.C. 40 Days for Life campaign. I do spend time sidewalk counseling outside the Washington, D.C. Planned Parenthood. So I'm both an academic, an analyst, a strategist, and an activist. So I wear many hats.
When I was looking at the Lozier Institute website, I was struck. The thought that occurred to me was if Jesus Christ himself were trying to save babies on earth, how would he do it? Would he just be saving babies, or would he trying to be blessing the mother as well? And of course, doing both is the task. And you all, I was impressed by how Christly the Lozier Institute is. How did you originally get the pro-life anti-abortion bug?
I can answer that several ways. I often just say that God kind of reached out and grabbed me. I was born and raised in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. I was a silly, I'm Roman Catholic.
Are you a Steelers fan?
Of course. Which choice do I have? Dad and I had season tickets for throughout high school, and yeah, fond memories going to Steelers football games. So I still follow the team, during the regular season. So
I'm a Dolphins guy from a million years ago. Mm-hmm. So thank you very much. We're the only undefeated team in the world, by the way.
Yeah, the Patriots, I guess, had a pretty close run that one year with the Giants. I think tripped up that Super Bowl.
You got to seal the deal, though. You got to win the
absolutely.
Big game. Okay, go ahead. You were born and raised in Pittsburgh, and
I was Catholic. Yeah, I went to Mass every Sunday. When I was in high school, though, abortion was not on the radar screen. I was like a lot of other high school kids. I was running around, taking my classes, trying to make good grades, involved in a bunch of activities, trying to get to a good college. This issue just was not, on the radar screen. When I was in 11th grade, I do remember seeing the movie, The Silent Scream. And I remember just sitting there, just being kind of disgusted by it. But it just, didn't make a big impact on me. I mean, I think it planted some seeds, but I just thought this is another lousy thing in a world full of lousy things. And, that was it. And then sophomore year, I'm, back on campus. And I wish I could remember exactly what happened. But I remember just sitting at Mass one day and listening to the sermon. And it just hit me like a ton of bricks. Like, this is a really important issue.
Wow.
It's not like kind of the capital gains tax or term limits or the idea of the week. This is life and death. This is something really important you should be paying attention to.
How old were you?
Oh, I would have been probably sophomore year. I'd probably been, 18 or 19.
Wow.
And I remember thinking to myself, okay, this is important, but, I'm a 19-year-old college student. What do I do? Maybe I can start a group. And shortly thereafter, I approached the priest on campus and said, I'm interested in starting a pro-life group. And he told me that another student was already working on it. And I got his name. I sent the student an email and said, would you want to work together on this? And he said, yes. And we got a group off the ground. And I never looked back. So I did a study on this. And again, I had some preliminary results. I want to get something out by January of 2003. That would have been the 30th anniversary of Roe v. Wade. I did have some preliminary results. I do remember circulating them. I kind of got a lukewarm response. I wasn't really plugged into pro-life circles and probably didn't know the best folks to reach out to.
What did you find?
I thought that, that the incremental laws were pretty effective. That, the cutting off taxpayer funding for abortion gets abortion numbers down. Parental involvement laws get abortion numbers down.
A naysayer, in other words, a pro, pro-rights,
pro-choice.
Thank you. Pro-choice folks would say that those laws have done a good job at restricting access, but a pro-life mindset would say that they have saved and saved and saved lots of babies.
Well, some pro-choice people argue that abortions happen no matter what, and that they're going to happen anyway. And if they're going to happen, they might as well, quote unquote, be safe or legal. And we find that no, abortion is not inevitable, that laws do affect human behavior. And, when you do set legal limits, they don't stop all the abortions, but they do have some impact. So there, if you look at the serious research done, most serious researchers, even some researchers who are sympathetic to legal abortion, do find that passing pro-life laws does some good and does get abortion numbers down. This is so, it was a study or a line of research that was, interesting to pro-lifers. I didn't get anyone to nibble, that January, but I was lucky because I was at Harvard and the Kennedy School of Government had kind of a visiting fellow program. And they'd bring about six or seven people in every semester to run seminars and meet with students. And that spring, one of the visiting fellows was a guy named Stuart Butler, who was the vice president of domestic policy for the Heritage Foundation. And he did a weekly seminar on healthcare policy, which I attended. I got to know Dr. Butler a bit, and we talked. And, essentially one day I pitched him the idea about doing a study on the impact of pro-life laws. And he was intrigued, but he was a little bit skeptical that Heritage at that time mostly focused on foreign policy and domestic policy. They really did not do much on social issues and had never really done a study on abortion before.
Right.
So he was interested, and some other people were interested, but they were very cautious. And I remember that summer, they actually had one of their interns reconstruct my entire data set from scratch. I looked at close to all 50 states over a span of probably 15, 20 years. I held constant demographic changes. I held constant economic changes. They wanted to make sure that this was just airtight. So they had someone reconstruct my whole data set. He found a couple, very minor errors.
Yeah.
But nothing that changed the findings substantially. They were happy with it. And they agreed to publish my study. And it came out, I think, the day of the March for Life in 2004. And, it's interesting. I kind of thought that, it got some attention. And I thought pro-life people would be happy and come along and pat me on my head and tell me what a nice guy I was. And thank me for the study. And that'd be it. didn't quite work out that way. People were very excited. You know, they thought this was a great piece of research and very useful. And, you know, they saw that I had an academic background and they asked me, can you comment and critique these other studies that keep coming out? And, you know, there's this pesky group, Guttmacher, that up until about 2006 or seven was Planned Parenthood's research arm. You know, they're pumping out all this misinformation. Could you, you know, rebut or, you know, give us some talking points, you know, to oppose their studies when they come out? So, you know, essentially I kind of realized the pro-life movement did not really have its own kind of in-house social scientists. So I'm like, you know, Michael, this is something that, you know, you should do. So I just, you know, did the writing, did the research, you know, threw it over my shoulder, declared myself an expert, kept writing on this topic and, you know, found a lot more things to write and research about. I'm very glad and honored to do this work.
It's amazing how Lozier Institute has every question you could ever dream up. They've analyzed it and, processed it and answered it. In the article, it said that you often are on the front line ministering or counseling ladies that are coming in for abortions.
Yep. I kind of help organize sidewalk counseling and prayer vigils outside the Washington D.C. Planned Parenthood.
Many years ago, I did a week or two in Amsterdam, Holland, short-term missions, and did very little, but. I was impressed. I'll take it to the grave. A guy that said, "You serve a man who drank wine and ate fish," and he air spit into my chest. He did not spit into my chest, but I could feel the air. I've never thought of the term air spit, but that's what he did. He air spit my chest, and I felt it. Can you think of an instance of someone who has reviled you and makes your life that day a little bit troublesome? Can you think of an instance like that?
We're not popular with pastors-by.
Of someone who has reviled you and makes your life that day a little bit troublesome. Can you think of an instance like that?
We're not popular with pastors-by. A lot of people make snarky comments at us. Basically I just try to, you know, ignore the pastors-by who, you know, when someone comes by and says something rude or inappropriate or offensive, I'll just say, I'll pray for you. And I just leave it at that. We have to deal with the abortion clinic has escorts and they often try to thwart our efforts. They try to prevent us from giving literature to people entering for abortions. And, you know, they can be frustrating to deal with. You know, I do try to pray for them. I just try to focus on being as, you know, prayerful as I can. You know, we had a very odd incident a couple of weeks ago where a friend of mine were praying outside of the Planned Parenthood, and this Planned Parenthood, they allow some of the clients to park on the roof, and two women, you know, I guess entered through the front. Yeah, they have a rooftop parking deck.
I see.
And some two clients entered to the front door. They didn't like what we were doing. They yelled at us. They told us we should be helping homeless people, which actually sometimes I do. There was like a tent of homeless people nearby, and I sometimes buy them sandwiches and you know, offer some fellowship with them. And they left, and then they got in their car, and then they, you know, I thought they were going to go away, but they parked on the top of the parking deck. And then from the parking deck, they started yelling at us. Yeah, they were very loud. It was some of the loudest yelling I've heard. It was just really, you know, ear piercing. And I just
how many floors up? What were
probably? I guess that building's about two or three stories, probably about two stories.
Give a shout out to a mom, a dad of yours, a sister, brother, uncle, professor that really inspired you in your work ethic, because you are a very strategic, tenacious worker. You're a tenacious laborer. Where did you get that from?
That's a very good question. I would say I have to thank my parents. You know, they really expected a lot out of me. I was very blessed to have the parents I do. I often say they came in right out of central casting. They knew when to be tough on me, you know, and they knew that they knew to expect a lot, but there were times they also knew they needed to be sympathetic to me. You know, there were some times I felt I was going to get in all kinds of trouble, and, you know, they're like, Michael, just chalk this up as a life lesson. You know, you made a mistake, don't do it again. And, you know, so sometimes, you know, they were easy on me when I thought they wouldn't be. And, you know, but they always expected a lot out of me, and they always expected a lot out of my brothers. So I certainly think I get my work ethic from my parents.
Dr. New, Michael New with the Lozier Institute and Christian Union, an associate scholar with the Lozier Institute. You are a laborer for your neighbors. You're doing great labors for neighbors. Keep up the great work. Thank you for being on our show.
Happy to do it. Keep up the great work on your end, and hope to be a guest with you again.
Look forward to meeting you.